Let's start with a prayer. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Lord God, we give you thanks for the opportunity to just come together as community, as brothers and sisters in the Lord, and take this opportunity to study and consider some questions, our traditions, our faith, our beliefs, and how they are related to one another. We thank you for the beautiful day in this place to be. And thank you for Nick and Laura's openness to us being in their space and using their space this evening. We ask these things through Christ our Lord.
Amen.
And the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. So tonight, the topic is our traditions. What our traditions tell us about what we believe, how we believe. So there's lots of ways you can go about this. I think there's lots of ways you can approach this question. I'm going to mostly focus on our traditions as Catholics. So things like, you know, what does our worship look like? And, you know, what are our practices around funerals and burial and holidays and weddings and, you know, our belief about martyrdom and missionary work, all these kind of things that we have a certain tradition about. So I'm going to kind of focus on that. I think it's important to start off with the concept of what's given. So what the church or what a tradition is, and then this idea of creating something or making something. And I think there's sometimes a tension between those two, and they are both needed to some degree, I would say. But I would say in our day, one of our struggles is that we long for depth, we long for tradition, and yet we also want, like, I want to make it unique and personal, and this is my thing, and it's all about what I want. And so the struggle, I think there's a tension there. There's a word that we use as Catholics, and especially when we talk about sacraments, the form. What's the form of the sacrament? Basically, what are the words that we say? What are the actions that we do? And we can talk about the form of our traditions. So if you were to talk about the form of your Christmas tradition that you have in your family, maybe you have certain things that you do. Do you hang stockings, or do you get together, play bingo, or whatever your particular traditions are? That's the form. It's kind of like everybody knows this is what we do when we get together for Christmas, is we do these things. At my house, we had a parade after Christmas Mass. On Christmas Eve, we'd go home, eat a nice fondue meal, and then we would parade, which I thought was really weird, and then eventually you got to like it, and you know, this is our tradition, this is our form. And then we'd open presents, and so forth. So knowing your form is important. What is our form of our tradition? So you could also talk about like an example of like, okay, what's, when you talk about like a sport, what's the form of baseball? Well, you have 9 innings, you know, both teams get to bat in the inning, there's 3 outs, there's, you know, 3 outs makes for the end of the inning, and so forth. All these things that you talk about that kind of form the game. And if you don't know those, then you really can't do the tradition, right? Or if you watch the tradition, it's kind of, it doesn't make any sense to you. It's like when I go watch something like cricket, I'm like, what are they doing? I don't know. I don't know how to play cricket. So to me, it's just, these guys are throwing a ball at some pins, and I know they're supposed to swing the bat and try to not get the pins, but after that, I don't know what happens. So there's things that if we don't know the form, we're going to miss out on what's trying to be handed on to us, or what's this tradition really about. You know, think about watching like basketball. The players know the game, right? They know the rules. They practice. They are aware of all those things. And then, because they know all those things, they can play the game well and enter into it. Without that, then if you're a new basketball player and you put out with the pros, you look kind of silly, right? You feel kind of silly because they're all doing what they're supposed to be doing. You're going, Oh, I just double dribbled. Oh, I just whatever. I don't know. I'm not a basketball player, so. So you're making mistakes, right? And it feels awkward. It feels like something's off. So there's something. If you know the form, then you're not discovering something new every time. And you know, think of something like for us as Catholics, we go to Mass. We know what to do. We know what to say and when to say it. We know when to kneel and when to stand, when to sit. And you know, if you bring a friend who's not Catholic, they're kind of like, why is anybody doing all these things? Like, I didn't. Who's putting up the cue cards to know what to do? You know, it's just we know what to do, but we don't think about it a lot of times. That's the form of the Mass. It's a tradition that we have, and it's easy to enter into, but it's also easy to take it for granted and say, oh, this is just what we do, you know? If you're a convert, you know what that experience is of going there and saying, I don't know what's going on, but everybody seems to know what they're doing, and this is interesting, huh? Interesting, yes. These Catholics, huh? So we follow the form of our tradition, and that allows for a certain level of freedom. You know, we might say, on the one hand, it seems like it's shackling because we got to do these certain things. We have to got to say these words, got to do these things. But what is the whole goal of the Mass or our tradition when it comes to worship? It's to encounter God, right? To elevate our minds and our hearts to God. And our form of the Mass or of worship allows us to do that. So we're not just kind of trying to focus on like I'm creating or I'm making something or I'm inventing something. It's no, I know what I'm doing. I know all the words to say, and I can enter into it and really put my heart into it, therefore, and I can encounter what's underneath that, which is the Lord. The challenge, though, is that sometimes we get overfixed on the form, and we just know the form, and we never enter into the deeper part, right? So we just stay at that level of, I'm doing this thing, and we don't think about why I'm doing this thing. And I think that was one of the tensions that developed the whole Vatican Council trying to develop the liturgy a little bit was to say, we've gotten a little heavy on the form. We're just, all we do is focus on what the priest is saying and what they're doing and whatever, and we're not really participating or entering into it on the same level. It's kind of like we're disconnected. There's a disconnect there. And so we want to change that. So in a game, if the players don't know the rules, the form, breaks down, right? Oh, you know, if you're playing football and none of the guys know what football is, it's really hard to play the game. Have you ever tried to teach like little kids, like the first time they play a sport? It's like, oh, Johnny, you know, you can't kick the ball, you gotta carry the ball, you gotta throw the ball and catch the ball, and like, you can't just pick it up after it's fallen on the ground, you know. They don't know the rules, so it's a lot of work to teach somebody that doesn't know. Now, it's important to do that, right? We need to teach them and help them. But unless they're willing to receive the game, you know, if you got 22 people on a field and you're gonna play football, if they all just start doing whatever they want, we're not going to have football. We're going to have chaos. You're going to have something that, okay, it's what they want it to be, but it's certainly not football. We can't call it that. And so our traditions, they help us to do something meaningful, that something has depth, something that brings us somewhere, rather than just, it's about me and what I want it to be. There's a saying that our liturgy professor at the seminary used to say, is impromptu liturgy is bad liturgy. Like, you should not be making things up on the spot. It should be everybody should know what they're doing, and they should be where they ought to be in the time, and so forth. There are times when you do have to be impromptu, right? Things happen. One time, I was at the cathedral, probably my first or second year as a priest, and we're celebrating Mass, and I think it was during the offertory. They were, you know, the guys were there doing their baskets and so forth, and this lady just came up to the altar and was like, obviously she wanted something. So I was like, okay, what do I do? So I walked over to her and said, hi ma'am, can I help you with something? I mean, I didn't have my microphone on, obviously. And I don't know if she was a little confused or what, but eventually we got her to go up, just have a seat, and I think she wanted communion. she wasn't speaking very clearly, so I don't know if something was going on, but we eventually got her to sit down and everything was fine. But sometimes you have things happen where it's like, what do we do? And you can see it sometimes on people's faces when something like that happens. They're all like, what is, they're breaking the form. It's like, yes, it happens, it's okay, it's not the end of the world. We can do this, you know. But it's these things that there should be a sense where we all are moving and intentional about what we're doing. So our tradition is like that. And if you break the tradition, then everybody's like, well, now what do we do? What do we do in this moment? Because there's no game plan. There's no map of where we go with this. And so it can be a little, instead of focusing on the tradition and what it's bringing us to, what we're celebrating, we start to focus on we don't know what to do. What are we going to do? Who should do what? You know, and that's, and in essence, it kind of destroys that deeper meaning, that it keeps us from entering into that deeper meaning of what the tradition is meant to lead us to. It becomes this kind of tension between, on the one hand, a practice sort of understood tradition, and on the other hand, spontaneity of entering into what's meant to, what's underneath the tradition, what is it that we're trying to approach or get at. And when we go one way or the other too far, I think it leads to problems, or it kind of breaks down, we lose the purpose of what we're doing. So there's maybe you've heard of he's not Saint John Henry Newman yet, he's blessed, but he's going to be canonized this fall, I believe, and so maybe you've heard of him. He had a book that he wrote called The Development of Christian Doctrine, and it basically approaches this whole question of what in the liturgy, what or in our faith, what's a true development? How can we distinguish a true development of doctrine, basically, things that we believe, versus something that's being brought in new, or something that is kind of going off in a different direction? We would maybe call it deformation. It's not an advancement, it's going off and doing our own thing, and so kind of just destroying the tradition. So we talked about this, and it's always a question, you know? And even the question that we talk about in our own time is this a true development, or is this a deviation? You know, and you know, to think about it, the example might be, if you have a tree that you plant, and it grows, you know, okay, it's growing, great, good, great. But does the tree develop differently, or does it, is it growing the kind of fruit it's supposed to, or is it doing something it's not supposed to do? Is this a true development, or is this going out in a different direction? So that's something we can measure in our traditions, because they do have to develop a little bit. You know, that first time that my parents said, let's do a parade, wasn't a tradition at that point. It was like, that is weird. What do we do? You know, so it took us a while to get to the point where, okay, we're going to sing songs while we parade through the house, and we're going to sprinkle holy water, and everybody has to bring a candle or a cross or something, and all these things that kind of became part of the tradition. It takes a while for that to develop, and there's something that's, you know, a true development would be, okay, yes, we sing Christmas carols versus we're going to play heavy metal and it's going to be awesome and it's going to be great. You know, no, that doesn't fit. It's not a true development. That would be a deformation of that tradition. So in order to participate on the level where we're focused on the form, we're able to move past the form, really, and say, okay, we just know what we're doing. We all have to be familiar with it. You might consider the example of, again, kind of doing the sports analogies. There's a thing called a bicycle kick. If you play soccer, you hardly ever see it, because it's really hard to do. Basically, it's a person runs, and then they flip, and they're upside down, and they kick the ball, because a pass came in from the side, and they kick the ball like this, and usually it's a shot. You wouldn't normally pass the ball like that, but you shoot at the net because you're facing this way and the goal's behind you. You jump up and you kick the ball. So it's a really impressive thing when it happens, and it's really cool. And you would see it like on a highlight reel, and it's like, oh, World Cup stuff. But if you didn't know the game and you didn't understand that this doesn't happen all the time, and you saw it, you'd be like, oh, that was impressive. But like, if you know the game and you know like what's happening, it's like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. This is amazing. Like, I got to see it in person. This is amazing. You'd be like, this is really cool, right? Versus, okay, yeah, that thing just happened. They scored a goal, I guess. Pretty cool. That guy must be really acrobatic. But the appreciation grows as you get more in depth of what the game is or how to play the game. And it's the same thing with our traditions. You know, if you are a bad soccer player, you have to think about, like, okay, here comes the ball, and I put my foot like this, and I kick the ball just the right angle, and I think about it, and even then, the ball might go off the wrong way, because you're not practicing it, right? But the more practice you get, the better you get at kind of playing, the easier, you don't have to think about it, it's just muscle memory. I know what to do, I can one touch it, I don't need to stop it and then kick it, I can just one touch and it goes to where I want it to go. The same thing with our traditions. If we know the tradition, it's not like we think about, okay, now we're going to say the creed. Now we're going to do the Gloria. Now we're going to, you know, we don't think about these things. It just comes out. We just do it. And that gives it a meaning and a depth because we can enter again. What the whole point of the tradition is to bring us somewhere. You know, the tradition of the Mass is to bring us to encounter God. The tradition of, say, a birthday party or something like that is to celebrate this person's life and to give thanks for who they are and what they are and how God created them and so forth. I think today we have, there's a huge desire, I would say, for meaning. We're looking for meaning in our lives, and yet there's a sense where we don't have meaning, or we lack meaning, we're looking for it, but then we try to create it on our own, and when we try to create something that's separate from a tradition, or separate from meaning, it just doesn't have that same power, and it becomes a sort of like, it's all about me, and what I want it to be. We can't transcend, in a sense. So there's these forces that are at work, again, kind of we talked about. So there's innovation, so kind of developing something and creating something, and then there's tradition, like what we have, what we hold on to, the things that we remember, and the things that, why we do what we're doing. There's spontaneity, which is great. You know, if you think of like a musician, if they're able to just kind of, they're really good, they can kind of just go and do it. They can create music on the spot. But if you're in a choir, and the director's like, yeah, I'm feeling really spontaneous right now, and I'm just gonna direct, I'm not a choir director, but if you're like, fuck, now we're gonna do this, and it's like, everybody's like, well, what are we doing? You know, we didn't practice that. Then, yeah, it's bad choir, right? It's not a good choir when there's spontaneity from one or two people. So familiarity is the opposite, right? We've practiced this. We know what to say. We know how to sing the parts and everything, and so we can create beauty here. So if you're performative, spontaneity is like an impressive thing. Like if you go to a concert and you see like somebody that they do a solo or something like that, it's like, wow, that is really impressive. I'm blown away by their skill, by their ability. But in a liturgy, in a choir situation, it's like, that's impressive, but really destructive or not helpful for what we're trying to do here. So there's that tension again. There's the tension between uniqueness. I want this to be unique, my own thing, versus getting into a depth and the richness of something that we can all be a part of, that we can all share and have that focus. The focus on self versus the focus on the divine. So these two things, there's these tensions that we kind of walk the line of, how do we bring this all together? We need both, right? We need both, but in the right proportion, in the right situation. So the pendulum of how to balance tradition versus innovation, or tradition versus true development, is not always easy to walk. And I think sometimes we see that. So now I want to talk a little bit how our traditions point to our beliefs. And where I encounter this as a priest is when I'm encountering people who have been maybe not in the church, not practicing the church, but then they come back to the church and they want something from the church. So somebody comes to Mass and they're like, oh, that was great. But you know what you could really use is, and then they have an idea, right? Which I hear, sometimes it's a good idea. And other times I'm like, man, that's not really a Catholic thing. We don't really do that. Like, so it's a good idea in the sense that I can see that you're wanting something that's beautiful and good, but it's more about what you want than about entering into something. Take for instance, when I meet with families, when I'm preparing to do a funeral, for instance, there's a lot of times where the people they have a deep memory of the church, and that's why they come to the church. And it's a beautiful thing that they come to the church and they want to bury their loved one, and they want to have a funeral, because they recognize, okay, this person was Catholic. Maybe I'm not practicing anymore, but I want to honor their beliefs, or I want to honor what they did. But sometimes, and it's not that they purposely do this, but they don't know the form, right? And so they're like, yeah, we want to do this, we want to have, we'd like to have a eulogy at this point in the Mass. Can we have this song, even though it's not Christian or Catholic or liturgical at all? You know, it's a Beatles song, but it's really meaningful to us, and so we really want that. We'd like to do these things, and it's, you're kind of going, so you kind of have to work with them a little bit and kind of say, well, there's certain things that we do as Catholics, and these aren't the things that we do. There's other ways you can incorporate those. You know, that's why there's the other parts of the whole process of the funeral and burial and the wake and all these things. They give us opportunities to express ourselves, but then there's a form that we follow as Catholics. And when we don't do those things, it becomes a problem. So these aren't necessarily bad or wrong or sinful things, it's just they don't understand, and because they don't have the form or they don't have that understanding of the form, they want to create something. And I think you see that a lot today with, particularly around death and dying. People don't, because we've become more secular in our world, people don't have the depth with those things. They want something meaningful, and oftentimes, actually, when you offer them what the church says and does, and you do it well, they come away and they say, wow, that was really meaningful. That was powerful. I'm glad we did that. But if they would have said, let's do this beforehand, it's kind of a struggle for them to accept it. They kind of say, well, I don't know if I like that. I don't know if I want that. And so it's kind of this tension you have to walk them through. And it's a challenge sometimes. But it's a beautiful thing when we can say to somebody, there's a way that we do this, and it's great that you want to make it personal. That's good. We can do that to some degree, but the focus here is not about what this person has done in their life, or that we love them a lot, and those are good things, but the focus here is this person has now died, and we're praying for them, and we are focusing on what God has done, which is to save us, offers us this path where we can return to God. And so the focus is that. And the secondary focus, obviously, is us here who are left and so forth, and we are sad and so forth, and we are mourning or grieving for this person. We love them. So that needs to come up too. So there's avenues by which we do both. But sometimes it takes us time to kind of figure that out. And so you kind of have to walk with people. And I don't know, you might compare it to like when one of your children has a boyfriend or a girlfriend and they come to your house for the first time and it's Christmas or it's Easter or it's 4th of July or whatever it is, and then your son or daughter's like, we do all these weird things, honey, it's what we do. And they're trying to explain to them like all the things that we do, and it's, you've never thought about it before because it's just what we do. It's not what we do in our family. It's normal to us. But then you bring somebody in from the outside and they're like, you guys are weird. I've never seen this before. And you're kind of trying to tell them and share with them how important this is or how meaningful it is, but they don't always get it, right? And so it's kind of that that challenge that we face sometimes about sharing our traditions and helping people to enter into the tradition, it takes time. It's not something you just get right away. You know, you can't bring somebody to Mass or bring somebody to from outside the country and come celebrate 4th of July with us, and they're going to get it right away and understand what it's all about. You know, it takes time to develop that tradition within our own hearts and our own souls. So even like the idea of the concept of a holiday, you know, secular society, we have holidays that we celebrate, and they're good, you know, but back in the day when Christianity was basically united, the holidays were all religious, right? There was no such thing as a secular holiday. It was like, what's that? You know, we're all Christians here, we're all Catholics, so we celebrate Christmas, we celebrate Easter, we celebrate all these different feasts of saints and so forth. And everybody takes off work, and we go and we celebrate, and we have a good time. And it's not about just, you know, blowing off steam or whatever. It's about us remembering what this day is about. You know, this special person that we celebrate because they're from our city, or they're from our country, or they're from our area, and they're a holy person. And so we celebrate that this special person, what their witness is for us. Or we still celebrate this special event in the Lord's life, or Our Lady's life, or something that there's a meaning there. But what we've kind of done is we say, well, holidays are just a day to get off of work, and it's nice when we get them, and isn't it great to have them, and it's another day to stay up late and go do whatever, and that's all it is, just a day off from work. Well, yeah, okay, hopefully you get work off, but hopefully there's a deeper meaning, and we try to do something that's connected to the day, right? If you have 4th of July and you don't remember, like, why do we have 4th of July, like, well, it's the day of Declaration of Independence. It's this moment when we, as a country, said, we're going to step off on our own, away from England, and wow, all the sacrifice that happened to make that happen. If we just think, oh, it's about fireworks, oh, it's about a parade, I mean, those are good things, and they build on that tradition, right? I would say those are a continued development of that tradition, but sometimes there's that tension. Or something like a wedding, for instance. This is another thing that for us as Catholics, for us as Christians, it has a deep meaning. It's a covenant. It's a participation in something that has a purpose for the rest of our lives. It there's meaning that's deeply purposeful for us in it. But today, the tendency is to say, this is a day when the two people, sometimes they're not even a husband and wife anymore. When we just take this moment and we have a party for our friends and make some kind of commitment, hopefully. But it's lost its kind of tradition of, like, there's something that we're doing here that's beyond ourselves. Like, we are entering into something that not only affects the two of us, but our families, our society, our nation, our relationship with God, and our own path to holiness. All these things are kind of built into that as a sacrament, and yet, more and more we see people not thinking about that. That's not the first thing that they think about. The first thing that they think about is, like, what's the venue going to be? And I know, it's hard to find places to find that, what's the right place, and what can we afford, and those, all those questions. But the first question should not be, where are we going to do it, and how much is it going to cost? The question should be, wow, this is something that we want to be ready for and prepared for, and let's go talk to our pastor, or let's go talk to our parents about how do we begin this process of entering into this life together. Something like martyrdom, for instance, that's a deeply Catholic tradition, not something that we say, you know, let's go be martyrs. Today is the day. Today is the day. But it's something that we have a deep belief about, and it's informed by our tradition. You know, there's some things that are worth dying for. There are some things that we cannot say, I'm going to compromise on that. If you're going to kill me because of this, then That's how it is. I can't say no to that. I have to say I believe in this. I'm not going to turn my back on God. I'd rather die. So these things that we believe inform what we do. Our tradition of, okay, this is, there are certain things that I have to say no to, or there are certain things I have to stand up for and I can't turn my back on. And that's a tradition that we have as Christians that goes all the way back to the beginning. What's the trend today? Well, you can be a martyr for just about anything, right? Animals' rights, or immigration, or all these things. And these things aren't necessarily bad things to stand up for and to say these are good things, but they're not. You're not a martyr for PETA, right? There's no such thing. Like, there's no divine or eternal goodness that's going to come from I saved these animals from being eaten or something like that. Something that has an eternal value is I followed Christ. I came to know Christ. I stuck with Him even when it meant that I was going to die, or meant that I had to surrender my rights, or had to go to imprisonment, or whatever. Martyrdom is a real thing, and yet sometimes we kind of cheapen it by saying all these other things are just as good, you know. Or missionary work. Missionary work is another thing that, for us as Christians, you look at the New Testament, that's all they did, right? There was nothing else to do, because we are a missionary church. We're either a missionary or we're dead, or it's going to end, right, with us. So they had to go out, and they proclaimed the truth, they proclaimed the gospel, they baptized people, they brought people to the faith. It was either do that, or this is the end. The beginning is the end, right? And so this idea of missionary work in the church has always been there. But today, in some sense, we've kind of stepped away from it, and we kind of say, well, what's the trend today? Missionary work is to go and do social justice. It's to do these works, these corporal works, which are important, and a lot of times they lay the base for that proclamation of the gospel. But so often now the idea is like, well, we don't want to offend anybody. We don't want to tell anybody what they should believe or what they should do. And of course, you have to do it in a way, you have to present the gospel in a way that is attractive, right? And it's got power on its own. It's not like we have to infuse it with something that it's like, here's the carrot. It's going to be really tasty. You have to eat the poison first, but here's the carrot, you know. Sometimes I think we struggle with that. We don't believe that the gospel itself is life-giving or is powerful. I mean, we feel like we have to dress it up a little bit and say, we'll give you a bag of gold if you believe Jesus or get baptized. Like, no, like, it's a choice, right? It's a choice, and we present it to them. Missionary work is going and presenting the gospel, and it might include social works or social justice items that are helpful to people, that allow them to enter into it, or perhaps allow them to take their focus off, like, I don't have food, I don't have clothing, I don't have shelter. If I don't have those things, I really can't think about the gospel in the way that you want me to think about it. So sometimes those things can allow for that sharing of the gospel, but it shouldn't become what has happened, is that it's become the focus. Is we're missionaries. That means we do these things. It doesn't mean that we share Jesus or that we show who Jesus is or that our focus is bringing Jesus. So we've kind of lost that in some degree. And you'll look at a lot of the missionary orders that used to be so powerful or used to be so good at sharing the gospel, and what they've become is these groups of people that do social work. And it's lost its kind of the depth of what it is. The tradition there has been watered down or has been lost. Even something like religious life or priesthood, you know, the idea that I give my life to something that is out of this world, or that I commit myself to a lifestyle that looks for eternal rewards. You know, all of us, really, every sacramental lifestyle, whether you're married or religious or priest or whatever, all of them have, in a sense, that aspect where they are meant to point to the divine. And yet, so often, we just focus on what can I get in this life, or what am I going to gain in this life? And so we lose it. We lose that tradition, the depth of what it is to live this life. And so I think all of these are just examples by which our tradition points to something,
And yet, in some ways we've surrendered that. Or when we surrender our traditions, or we let go of them, or we allow them to be changed, or we let go of the form, it loses its power to transform us, or it loses its power to create in us this something new. And so, I guess what I would share tonight is just that part of the way I've been approaching parish life and the whole like apostolic work of being a pastor is to try to have this idea of like, there's a tradition of the church, and it's a good tradition, and we should stick with the tradition. We don't have to create something new. It's certainly okay to accept developments that have come, but we have to be careful about that and say, what is the true development? And sometimes it's not clear right away. And so you can always be safe in tradition, right? You're going to just say, well, I know this is safe, so let's stay here. These other things, they might be okay, but time will tell, right? Like, I would say, you know, maybe this is going on a little limb a little bit, but I grew up in a church that was a new church that built it in the 80s, and it's not impressive. Right? You look around and you say, it's a big brick building, and it's kind of dark, and there's lots of like,
blah.
Like, the walls are just brick walls, and there's no statues, there's no art, there's no inspiration. It's in the round. It's all these things that you kind of like, okay, it's a gathering space, certainly, but it's not something that inspires you to say, okay, there's something incredible that's happening here right now. It does happen right there, right? They have mass, it's beautiful, but there's a lot of things that are missing. Now, since then, they've done some changes over the time to kind of try to bring in some of that. But I think sometimes we get caught and we miss where we're meant to go. So for me as a pastor, I'm always trying to stay in the tradition. Not that I'm just saying, well, everything else is bad, but it's always a question of like, okay, is that a real development, or is that something that's going to lead us to a place? And sometimes it takes time, right? So when people were building these churches in the 80s, it was kind of like, this is what we're doing right now. And it seems appropriate. But now 40 years later, we look at it and say, I don't know about that. So sometimes it takes time for a development or a deformation to be clear. And so what I would say is, you're always safe from tradition. You're always safe going with what the church has always said or done. And so let's stay there unless we have a really good reason not to. So I could probably keep talking, but we're already at 37 minutes, 38 minutes almost. So let's conclude there. If there are questions, I'm happy to